Follow us on Twitter at Sports Radio WNML to keep up with breaking sports news. Now, back to Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Himes on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Hour number three of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. And joining us now via the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline is Rob Lewis of AllQuest.com. He joins us for the next half hour on the program, the next two segments, to talk Tennessee basketball, Tennessee football, you name it. Always glad to have Rob along. And again, 656-9900 to join us. Rob, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you today?
Doing well, and we saw, again, the roller coaster ride continue for Tennessee basketball, a not-so-great performance, but a win against Vanderbilt last week, followed up by the predictable loss on the Plains at Auburn, despite the Tigers being shorthanded. What were your takeaways from another less-than-successful trip to Auburn?
I just thought it was a bad week in general for the Vols. You mentioned they didn't look great at Vandy, but you know Vandy was playing without – by far, their two best players in Dylan Bissou and Scottie Pippen Jr., guys that are the third and fifth leading scorers in the SEC. And Bissou's the leading rebounder and you know, didn't have anything close to the firepower to replace what they lost. And yet that was a four-point game with four and a half minutes left. Tennessee just couldn't put them away. And against Auburn on Saturday, I didn't see a team that had a lot of passion and just about – no confidence outside of the two freshmen and Eve Pons, who had a decent day with 10 points and 8 rebounds. But Auburn, that was an Auburn team that was not only were they playing without Sharif Cooper, but they'd lost 6 of the last 7 mm-hmm. coming into that one. So, you know, it's March now, a time when you want to be peaking in college basketball, and it does not look to me like this Tennessee team is close to that.
Yeah, a lot of the things that you hear year in, year out is that defense is supposed to travel well and that you would expect the one thing that you can control is effort. And for Coach Barnes to share his frustrations afterward and say that he essentially had three guys that were there essentially carrying their own weight, it is really surprising at this stage of the season just for the fact that you would think just in terms of matchups, Tennessee's lack of success against Auburn for so long now would have guys fired up just for that matchup alone, regardless of who was suiting up for the Tigers.
Yeah, they did not look fired up, that's for sure. And I thought, you know, you can point to a lot of different numbers, but the biggest one that jumps out at you when you're talking about which team was more aggressive, which team was playing with more energy, was Auburn gets to the foul line 37 times, Tennessee gets there 10 times, and all 10 trips were Johnson or Springer. And yes, I mean, Tennessee was fouled late in the game, but it was still, you know, disproportionate, more than double before they started sending Auburn to the line to, you know, when it was desperation time.
When you look at the offensive rebounds, Auburn had 16 of them. Rob, that stood out to me. What about you?
Yeah, and it's been a problem all year long, Jimmy, for this team. I mean, not, you know, maybe not every single game, but that's an area of weakness for this team. Eve Pons had 8 rebounds in that game. Your next leading rebounder is Jaden Springer with 5, a guard. You know, Tennessee's big. They don't score. They don't get fouled, and they by and large are not very good rebounders. And that's the problem with this team in a nutshell, I think. You know, they have a hard time protecting the glass. They're one of the worst rebound teams in the SEC when you look at just conference play only. They're getting – you know, just no post score right now. I mean, Pons with 10 points, and that's a nice game, but that's not, you know, you're not running your offense through that guy. The disappearance of John Fulkerson to me has just been the most mystifying thing about this season by far. You know, in SEC play last year, he was a 15-point game scorer. This year, that's been cut in half, 7.3.
We heard Rick Barnes mentioned, I guess it was on the Jim Rome show, that he believes in COVID-19 fatigue and that it has impacted college players around the country. Do you think he might be referring to some of his own players?
Jimmy, I would hate to speculate. I mean, I think I wouldn't name names, but it's been there. There have been a lot of kids on the team that have had it, to my knowledge, and certain, it does not appear that everybody that I know that is that has been affected. I'll put it that way. I mean, but I can't speak to individuals. Maybe that is the case. Maybe it's affected guys differently.
You look at what now is left in front of this team, and Tennessee has no midweek game this week. They will play at home against Florida. So if that game takes place, they will get to have a senior day. But it looks like, Rob, they've kind of been locked into place. I guess they could pass LSU depending on what happens to the Tigers this week. But what do you think in terms of the importance of a 4 seed versus a 5 seed with very little room for movement kind of still within reach?
Are you talking about the SEC tournament, John?
Yes.
I think it's huge to get to the 4 seed. And have you? I was looking at that right before I came on and was trying to figure it out. So they can pass LSU, but LSU has to lose twice this week. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So, yes. But I think it's a pretty big deal to play on Friday instead of Thursday. I mean, you know, Auburn won the tournament a couple of years ago by playing 4 straight days, but I think that's. I do think it's an advantage to get that extra day. Of course, that puts you up against Alabama on Saturday, assuming that you can win your Friday game, which for this team, I don't think anything is unthinkable right now. But if I'm Tennessee, I think that's an important goal to be able to get that 4 seed as a double bye.
Yeah, the likelihood, though, is, Tennessee needs help and a lot of help because LSU has Vanderbilt and Missouri as its 2 games this week. And I'll give credit to Vanderbilt. I thought for sure that Ole Miss had the potential to catch Tennessee because it's got the head-to-head tiebreaker and played Vanderbilt twice.
Sure.
But among all the stunning results this season, Vanderbilt winning without its 2 best players, finding a way to beat Ole Miss says a lot about the Commodores.
Yeah, and are they going to be back this week? Do we know? Because I think they can beat LSU if they're a full strength. That's at Vandy, but I do not know if those 2 kids are coming back or not. Now, LSU's lost 2 in a row, including a double digit loss at Georgia last midweek. They're hard to figure too. And I don't know if they're quite as schizophrenic as Tennessee is, but they are certainly up and down. But I don't think Vandy has a chance at beating them without DC or Pippen Jr. But
that LSU defense is optional?
I think so too. I mean, and their last one is a road trip to Missouri, which is definitely losable. I mean, they'll have to. Missouri will guard them and make that a tough game.
And then Florida has Missouri and Tennessee. If Florida loses twice, Tennessee with a win over the Gators could catch them. That would be 10-7 versus 9-7. So there are 2 teams in play, but again, you need one of those 2 teams to lose twice and Tennessee to win on Sunday. Sorry, Jimmy.
No problem. I did want to get your take on Arkansas. They have won 9 in a row. That includes a win over LSU. They're really playing really good basketball. That's a team that looks like it's peaking. What's impressed you the most about Arkansas and its winning streak?
I think I agree with Jimmy. I think they're playing better than anybody in the SEC right now, in my opinion. They obviously play at a high tempo. They get up and down the floor. A little weak on defense. I mean, they're middle of the pack. They're not. I think they're eighth. And I was looking at all this today. I think they're eighth in the league in field goal percentage defense. So they're not great at guard you, but I like the way they play. They get up and down the floor, and I really like the guard with Moses Moody. Big fan. The freshman guard, 6'6", 6'7", kid.
Yeah.
He is a really good player.
Getting back to Tennessee with Fulkerson struggling as he has, would you look to post up Keon Johnson more?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, you can't use him the same way, but I would look to do some of that. I'd really be surprised if Fulkerson starts from here on out. I mean, Tennessee's toyed with that small ball lineup some, but I think that's the direction they go. I'm not saying he's not going to play, but I would be surprised if he's not out of the starting lineup going forward. But the problem with Tennessee and playing small is that most teams that you think of that are really good at that, like Alabama, are spreading the floor with, you know, three or four guys that are really good shooters. And that's the, you know, they get the benefit of, you know, guys driving in and dishing it out. Tennessee's not really built that way with the shooters. When they spread the floor, it's for, you know, Keon or Jaden to create, you know, driving opportunities to get into the rim. I mean, you know, Bailey can get hot. Muscovy's a 34% shooter, but they don't, I mean, they just don't have any real snipers. I mean, Jaden shoots at a high percentage, but he doesn't shoot a lot of them. And to me, it's really tough to play Bailey and Muscovy together at the same time because of how vulnerable that leaves you on defense.
Who do you think serves as the best point guard on this Tennessee team?
I think it changes from game to game. I would probably say most of the time I would like to see Jaden handling that. But, you know, Viscovi just can't beat anybody off the dribble, but he's probably their best passer in terms of vision and creativity. You know, Jaden can certainly do it. I'm not him and Keon aren't selfish by any means, but they are built to score. You know, that's kind of, I think, you know, how they see the game. But for right now, I would take Springer, but they just don't have a prototypical point guard on the roster.
Our guest, Rob Lewis of VolQuest.com. We've got more with Rob coming up. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Hey.
From the Budweiser studios of The Sports Animal.
What do you mean, what's wrong with? What's wrong with you?
No, what's wrong with you?
No, what's wrong with you? You're projecting.
Drop it.
You drop it.
We are 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, Rob Lewis of VolQuest.com, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. And, Rob, turning our attention to Tennessee football, defensive staff nearly complete, and the staff of assistants nearly filled for Josh Heupel. Your thoughts on the most recent additions?
I like the Power 5 experience on the defensive side of the ball. That, to me, is what jumps out. You know, certainly the Tim Banks coming from Penn State, he's been at this level. He knows what it's like to recruit against, you know, programs like Michigan, Ohio State, the level of prospect that you're going after. So obviously, you know, Rodney Garner, Tennessee fans know that name and experience that he brings in the SEC with the, you know, relationships going back two decades. And you know, real hotbeds of recruiting. I mean, if you're going to be successful in Tennessee, you're going to have to recruit the state of Georgia well. Rodney Garner has made a career out of doing that. Brian G. Mary, for, you know, lots of Power 5 experience, coming from Michigan, was at Texas, so, you know, same thing there in terms of knowing what it's like to, when recruiting is not, can't just be good, it has to be great if you're going to win your conference, which is, you know, the state of things in the SEC. And Willie Martinez, I mean, I think some fans have tutu'd that because he's, you know, they view him as having some Butch Jones stench on him. But I was always a fan of Willie. I think he's a real, you know, easy guy to work with. I think he's a professional. I mean, certainly, you know, when he's around, there's a grown-up in the room. And like Garner, he's got tons of experience in this league in the SEC.
And as expected, Ty Simpson revealed his choice last week. If it had happened a couple of months earlier, it might have been a different result. But in the end, he chooses Tuscaloosa. How tough do you think it'll be for Tennessee fans to watch whatever path he finds himself on with the Crimson Tide?
Yeah, I think it'll be tough. And it'll be one where, you know, it's just the most Tennessee thing ever, John, that, you know, you have what looks to be a generational quarterback prospect. I mean, certainly he's the highest-rated quarterback in this state since Brent and I have been doing this, since Rivals has existed. And for him to come along when it's time for him to make the decision, your program to be under a cloud of NCAA scrutiny with, you know, probation looming and in the midst of a coaching change, it just, I mean, it writes itself as you cover Tennessee, you know, athletics, learn about it.
And also, when you take a look at what's next in terms of who Josh Heupel's targeting. I don't think there's any question that he and his staff have been doing their very best to get caught up on what is a very highly regarded class of 22 within the state of Tennessee. How do you think they're doing in playing catch up and just trying to reach out and connect?
Well, I mean, and just talking to kids, you know, they seem to be very receptive at the moment. I mean, they're doing, you know, group Zoom calls with multiple prospects on the same Zoom call at one time, which seems to have gone over well because in this day and age, you know, so many kids know each other from, you know, working out together at these places like, you know, National Playmakers Academy in Nashville, or playing in a seven-on-seven team in the summer. So it's not just, you know, guys from different high schools know each other in this day and age. Or, you know, even though it hasn't happened in the past year, taking visits together, going to camp. So, you know, I think that, you know, they have been well received. But the bottom line is, you know, Tennessee's got to win some football games, and they really need a resolution, or at least an idea of what the resolution is going to be for play stuff. It's just the environment to recruit in right now.
Rob, not only did Simpson go to Alabama, but Sam Horn from Georgia turned around and committed to Missouri. Was that a surprise?
That surprised me. Not that he didn't pick Tennessee, but, I mean, but for people that don't know, both his parents went to Tennessee. He's got a brother who's a student at Tennessee right now. But the fact that he picked Missouri when you're from Georgia, it wasn't like it was just at Tennessee and Missouri. I mean, he's a guy that would have had some offers, you know, bigger offers if he had waited longer. And to go to that program, to me, which is just, I mean, a nothing. I'm not saying that about Eli Drinkwitz. So I just, if you've been there, it does not feel like you're walking onto an SEC campus. There's no, you know, it feels like the Midwest, which is what it is. The passion, the pageantry, got none of that on that campus, the game day atmosphere. So for him to pull that trigger, that one, I was not remotely surprised that Ty Simpson went to Alabama. But if you're, you know, Tennessee fans can get angry. But if you're that young man's parents, I mean, how can you send him here when the other two options are Alabama and Clemson? That to me was a pretty informed decision on his part. But the Horn decision yesterday, that one really surprised me. The fact that it was Missouri, that he's, you know, picking that place, leaving the South, where I guess he stayed in the SEC technically, but to go play for that particular program.
Let me ask you about a couple of the quarterbacks. Tavon Carter from Memphis, what's his interest in Tennessee?
I don't know, Jimmy. I mean, really, we've all been so focused on Ty Simpson, and that's, you know, that's for previous staff. That was where all their focus was. And so I'll be honest with you. I don't have a gauge or a feel for really what anybody else, what the quarterback board looks like. Because it is, until Friday, it was all about Ty Simpson. And then it was pretty obvious that they were going to turn to Horn after that. But so right. Beyond that, I'm kind of just grasping at straws.
Yeah, I did see where Tennessee offered a 6'5 quarterback, Tavon Jackson, out of Indiana. So but he's also got basketball offers. We'll see what happens there. And one other note, I talked to T. Martin earlier today. He told me that his son, Caden Martin, is considering Tennessee, but in baseball only. And that Arizona State, Miami, and Oregon are football and baseball. And he's going to make an announcement Wednesday, so we'll see.
This is secondhand information, so don't act like it's gospel. But I've heard that he was leaning hard for a little while of going the baseball-only route. Now, I'm not saying that he won't, you know, pick a school that will allow him to do both, but it has sounded to me, just from a couple of different people that I've spoken to, that he was leaning – towards the baseball way. Frankly, if I'm a kid and I have a chance to be a pro at either one of those, it's an easy decision for me. I'm going baseball. And you know, injury factor, sure. Quality of life, length of your career. I just, you know, I know Kyler Murray famously went the other way, but to me, if you've got a shot at making it to the pros, baseball seems the way to go.
All dollars are guaranteed, that's for sure.
And you can play for, you know, 15 years is not unusual. As we're in football, that is a huge exception to the rule.
So, Rob, back to Tennessee basketball. Volunteers have one game. It's Sunday at noon against Florida. if you had the chance to drop in an opponent on Wednesday, would you? Or would you just play it as it lies, see what happens, and work on just improving yourself?
No, I wouldn't play. I wouldn't play like a mid major or something like that, which I don't know how seriously Tennessee explored that. But I would have liked to have seen, you know, the SEC fix it to where they got another game. But I guess, you know, the games are the total number of games have kind of evened out. Mm-hmm. But you know, just for this Tennessee team, I think they could use a week. Personally, I mean, I know, you know, some people will say that, you know, play as many as you can, and I get the wisdom of that. But I think this team could use a week. I don't think Josiah's 100% healthy. He looks to me like he's tentative. I think that wrist is still bothering him. So just for him individually, I think he could use the rest. And I think this, you know, we're in March now, so I'm not sure how much improvement they have to figure some things out.
Rob, what's going on these days at VolQuest.com?
Well, as Jimmy just noted there, we're trying to find Tennessee's next quarterback target. that will certainly be a focus as we go forward, and recruiting in general, as we talked a little bit about. The staff is really hitting the state of Tennessee hard, and with good reason. It's a loaded class in state this year. It could be a foundational class for this staff. So, got a lot of recruiting content focused around that. Obviously, covering basketball and anticipating the start of spring practice maybe here in 2 or 3 weeks.
Rob, we always appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time. As always, have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Monday.
Thanks, guys. Enjoyed it.
All right. Thank you. That's Rob Lewis of VolQuest.com joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break. When we return, Tennessee baseball coach Tony Vitello joins us on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
81. Over 20 years of the top-rated afternoon sports show in Tennessee. This is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Himes on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. Joining us now on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline is Tennessee baseball coach Tony Vitello. The Volunteers were 4-2 last week, and they were pushed hard by Indiana State. Volunteers got a walk-off win yesterday as the new Sunday tradition of extra innings played a part. But Tennessee gets the win to finish the weekend with a 2-2 split with the Sycamores. Coach, how are you?
I'm a lot of things, John. I'm busy. I'm good. I'm good overall. I got my health, so happy with that. But been a busy, eventful day, that's for sure. And then, as you mentioned last week, it was good to play as many games as we did, and I'm all for extra innings. Would have liked to win one or two more games than we did, but we definitely got a lot out of the month of February.
Well, why don't we go ahead and talk with just quickly about the news of today. You've got the shingle out for an opponent on Wednesday, as Dayton has informed you guys that they will not be here on Wednesday. You told us before the season started this was a significant concern, and already it's kind of reared its ugly head. What is the process? How do you go about trying to find an opponent on such a short notice?
Yeah, no, the process started. I was motivated from the weekend to get in early and address some issues today, and a new one popped up about 7 a.m. from Dayton. Said they weren't going to come, and I responded kind of in an Italian fashion immediately, why not, with some other things in there. And, you know, new information was basically the quote. I know they're not down a lot of players, or at least that's not what was said. So that part's frustrating, but what's done is done. We needed a game. So Chad Zerker and I, our director of ops, just got to work on the phone and on the computer and sent out nonstop emails. I know coaches right now across the country have been using kind of this reply all to all the head coaches across the country, but I just don't see much need to be emailing coaches from California and stuff like that. So we just picked out anyone that's even close to driving. And it was about 4 hours straight of messing with that. And then there's been some more time put in after lunchtime. And I got an exclusive for you here on the radio show if you're ready for it.
Okay.
We will travel to Austin Peay, in-state school, call it an in-state rival if you want, but we're going to jump on a bus and be the Road Vols again and play a game over at Austin Peay. I think it's been quite some time that Tennessee's been over that way. They've got a road trip this weekend, so, and they got a game tomorrow, so coming here was not an option for them. But we, after a couple hours of work, had to throw away that option of playing at Lindsey Nelson and just looking for anything. We just want to play. And those guys offered the opportunity, and so we'll drive over there and play a 4:30 game on Wednesday afternoon.
Wow. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's – and I don't know that they, you know, they haven't announced it yet. And I made sure I texted our players right before the show and let them know too. And it, I think it'll be great for those kids. I mean, Elijah Pleasance is from Clarksville, Christian Scott, Sean Scott, a freshman lefty. We've been so fired up to show you guys Jake Fitzgibbons. He's short in stature, but a good left-handed pitcher that's a freshman, and he had COVID just before the season started, so we're hoping he gets his first innings close to his backyard. He's from Mount Juliet. So I think there's a lot of positives there. And, hey, the other thing is, you know, Ray Hand, he and his phenomenal wife, Lucy, they've got a suite on the 50-yard line over there, you know, in our football stadium. And the stadium that Austin Peay baseball team plays in is named after Ray Hand, who donated some money to their school as well. That's where he's from. So that's got a cool little twist to it as well.
Yeah. Tony, what's the status of Jackson Leith?
Jackson is going to get an MRI. He came back in, was still sore. He did have a little bit of a strength to it, which was a good sign. Sometimes you see guys get real black and blue with that hamstring injury. He did not have any bruising. So we're hopeful that it's, you know, best case scenario for what is a bad injury regardless. I mean, anyone who's had it knows it doesn't go away until you fully rest it. So at the very least, he's out a couple few weeks. And I think that's if things hold true to what we've seen now. But an MRI will be more specific about what exactly happened with that hamstring and kind of a weird turn of events there.
Had you planned to bring Sean Hundley in out of the bullpen in that game and just also talk about the challenge of somebody coming in on such short notice like that?
Yeah, no doubt. It's awkward. And our plan was to use Redmond first, because we had not used him, and Sean, you know, threw 30 pitches Friday, and then finished with Sean. That was plan A. Of course, there's other guys available, and you never know what's going to happen. But, you know, when Woody said, I don't think he should pitch, then immediately said, that's fine, we don't want to press the issue, and walked over to Sean and said, you can warm up in the bullpen if you want. We actually kind of argued with the umpires. They said, why wouldn't he warm up out here on the game mound? And Frank is the one who taught me that a few years ago, is the pitcher, by rule, can warm up in the bullpen if he wants, which I think is a lot better setup. So, you know, Sean took his time and was able to go through his routine down there. And then, you know, once you come out on the mound, you know, again, it's a little bit awkward, but maybe you're a little bit more in the flow of your routine after that full warm-up session.
Was really impressed with what Sean had, and he gave up the two-run home run, but that was about it. I just thought he came through with flying colors, and once again, he's proved the entire time he's been at Tennessee, he's just ready when you say go, isn't he?
He really is, and our video coordinator, who's wise beyond his years, said he's almost reckless with how courageous he is. It's hard to do it in the sport of baseball like Jason Sutherland was the guy on the basketball court for us at Missouri when I was a little kid. Lenny Dykstra was the madman in center field crashing into walls and things like that. And as a pitcher, you know, I guess you can have some guys like Roger Clemens, but he's about as courageous as it gets, and you wouldn't know it unless you're around the program as long as, you know, all of us are. Again, his courage is literally almost reckless with how he is. And we eventually had to pull him out because of pitch count. And then you go to a guy who, I don't know how you can downgrade at all with courage when you bring in Redmond Walsh.
Threw 70 pitches. Was that the I just the fact that he kept going and was up to the challenge, it was unfortunate because you see it so many times in this wonderful game. All it takes is a tough team to make the most of just a ray of light, and that's exactly what happened in that eighth inning. Two quick outs, then an error, and lo and behold, two eye blinks later, game's tied at five. I was really impressed with how hard Indiana State fought, but also impressed with the resolve that Redmond Walsh didn't really bat an eye after that. He didn't give them much of a chance at all to score after they took advantage of that eighth inning rally.
He really kind of gathered himself. I mean, we don't make the, you know, what could have been a challenging play. I don't know how difficult it was, but we could have the inning over. And then there's a ball in the dirt that was a real tough one. Pav caught his butt off, but maybe we could have prevented that from going to the screen. And then he started to make some mistakes, too, that he normally doesn't make. But he righted the ship and made an unbelievable play, you know, PFP-wise. Fielding his position a couple innings later and just showed what he's about. It doesn't matter how it gets done. He just wants to win. And it was pretty cool watching our guys kind of dogpile or do what they did in right field. There's even a picture maybe out there on the internet of he's kind of in the background. And he's the one who did all the most dirty work, I should say. And the other guys are kind of throwing the party. And he's just a really mature kid, and I can almost get inside of his head because I know him well enough. He was kind of just happy that the guys were getting to enjoy themselves. There's that scene in Shawshank Redemption where Andy Dufresne gets all the guys a bunch of beers on the roof that they're tarring, and he doesn't even have one. He just sits there and enjoys the fact that everyone's getting to hang out and enjoy life a little bit, and that's kind of what that picture in a crazy way reminded me of. So he's a special one.
So I guess that would make you the narrator, and we'll have more with Old Red coming up.
Morgan Freeman's got me beat a little bit on the voice.
We'll get a break. We've got more with Coach Vitello in just a moment. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Credibility, honesty, and a dedication to bring you the sports information you deserve each afternoon. This is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Final segment to hour number three of Sports Talk, a final segment with Tennessee baseball coach Tony Vitello. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams.
Tony, I wanted to ask you about the Saturday where you got swept. You had difficulty with the bats, 4 of 17 runners in scoring position in those two games. Was that unusual to have that kind of difficulty with runners in scoring position?
I think with an older group like this that's got a little bit of ability with the bat, I think it's fair to say that it was. And what you see in a lot of circumstances, even that play we talked about defensively, a couple plays we didn't make in extra innings or late in the game are guys that typically do make those plays. And it all can fall under the same category or underneath the same umbrella of guys trying to do too much. I mean, I think some guys are in a different spot in their career here where they feel like they're a name and they feel like there are expectations for this team to do things where maybe in the past it was all kind of icing on the cake if we could do some things around here. They feel the pressure personally or as an individual and then feel it as a team. And you're seeing it really kind of constrict some guys. I mean, you're seeing swings they don't normally take, swinging at pitches in a foolish manner. You know, and not making plays defensively if they can. So those are kind of some of the things we talked about in the coaching office today. And hopefully as games continue being played, these guys release a little bit of that pressure.
Well, one bright spot was Kirby Connell. He came out of the bullpen, 4 1/3 innings, one hit, 13 consecutive batters retired. Just talk about his performance.
He was awesome. He had the I don't know how well anyone could see it, but I know he darkened in that mustache a little bit. He didn't tell me that he did, but he had the hair flowing and the coloring for men's hair is, he had that in the mustache and whatever it was all working. And Frank and I talked today that, I mean, that's the guy we saw in high school that wasn't a big prospect. It wasn't flashy radar gun numbers or anything like that, but He was really reliable getting outs and very composed, almost kind of another version of the guys we were talking about before, Hundley and Walsh. And I don't think we really got to see that Kirby for a while because of his leg injury. He had a great fall for us last year as a freshman, and then just kind of horsing around, turned his leg and broke his leg. And it's his first injury ever in his life. And it was a long struggle to get back to where he really started. And now I think he's back to that point and has even improved.
What do you think, just the competition, the back and forth, the battle that Indiana State provided, what do you think that means to a team like yours to be tested like this at this early stage of the season in terms of maybe some lessons learned and just a perhaps setting a tone?
You know, it's so huge, and who knows how last year would have went. But if you go back 2 years, I think we started out, 17-0? And there were a couple close games. And, you know, Fresno and us did go back and forth verbally a little bit. And we had a really tight game with Indiana. And we beat a kid who I think went in the second round. So there was competition there. But there wasn't nearly as much adversity and different types of repetitions during that 17-0 stretch. So I think when we got into SEC play that year, we weren't necessarily quite ready for all that came with it. And I think as frustrating as Saturday was to be a Vol fan, Vol coach, Vol player, and then some of the other crazy things that have gone on that have gone in our favor, those could really, really work for us down the road if the players will let them do that. And the coaches, of course, need to point out what those lessons are.
So, again, to repeat what you told us at the start of our conversation, you're going to travel to Austin Peay on Wednesday for a 4:30 first pitch against the Governors, and then you'll be home for three against Georgia State. And this is a team that, while Vanderbilt scored a lot of runs yesterday, they beat the Commodores earlier in the weekend, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. They're just at first glance. Their freshman, or I think he might be a sophomore, their Friday night starter looked very impressive against Vanderbilt. And if you look at Georgia State's schedule, they probably have the toughest schedule in the country to start the year for baseball. And so we've got our work cut out for us this weekend, but we didn't really want to take the week off. I mean, it could have been a good time after such a long weekend just to catch your breath and not play this week, but you know, we committed to the idea we want to play 56 games. I mean, that's the coaches speaking and the kids. These guys all want repetitions. We still need to find out what we got. Like Kirby was, you know, something new and fresh for all of us. And there's other guys out there we need to find out how they're going to perform on game day or just accumulate some reps so they're ready for SEC play. So we're definitely going to get a challenge on the road with some familiar faces in state. And then Georgia State won't be scared one bit rolling into our place with what they've had on their schedule. And they'll be led by a pretty good arm on Friday night as well.
Coach, we always appreciate your time. Thank you so much for that. Congratulations on being able to fill what was a sudden void in the schedule as quickly as you did. Good luck in Clarksville, and we look forward to seeing you at the ballpark on Friday.
Yeah, thank you so much, and sorry to do 95% of the talking, guys. I probably knocked off a few of the ability to ask a few questions, but a little delirious up here, but the good thing is we get to play.
That you do, and that's why we call you.
Yeah. All right. Well, you owe me for the exclusive we posted on here, so I'll just take whatever kind of gift you want to give me. I'm fine with it.
All right, it'll be a harmonica, just like for Red. But
take care.
All right, thank you. That's Tony Vitello joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break. Hour number four of Sports Talk's coming up. We've got a lot coming your way before we step aside at 7, but up next, it's your chance to win. It's the Sports Fix at 6 as you listen to 99.1, the Sports Animal.